The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Taking Stock. It's Wednesday, the 19th of July, 2023. Ooh, it's an exciting day, isn't it, John?
Yes, it's another day.
No, it's not. This is, do you know what? I did say yesterday, and in fact, last night I tweeted, I did say, if CPI data, if inflation data comes in below expectations, I think the bottom of the market's behind us. I think it's the start of the end of the bear market. Of course, a bull market is determined from 20% off the bottom. We're nowhere near that yet on the AIM All Share. But it's looking good. Let me just share this with you. There we are. The FTSE 100 up 1.54%. FTSE 250 up almost 3%. FTSE 350, 174. AIM All shaving up 1.1%. It's feeling like, I did say this on Twitter as well, Vaccine Day back in November 2020 when the markets rose, all of everything, the tide just went up. And I do think this now, you can start to see a switch in liquidity. It'll become easier for microcaps, smaller caps to raise money. Liquidity will build slowly. The inflation figures aren't getting worse from here, don't you think?
I don't think they're going to get much, much worse. But I mean, I just think that the pace at which they would improve, you know, this is one day. This is one month's news. You know,
it was a watershed day. It's the first time. I mean, just looking at, in fact, before you get into this, by all means, you know, comment below. Mm. I had one comment yesterday I'm not quite happy with. And in fact, I'm getting it up. Who is it? Ian Wright. All right. Now, I don't know if it's the Ian Wright, but Ian Wright commented, a dichotomy of views between Justin's rampy hopefuls and John's cautious quality strategy. A much better balance than Justin on his own. Ian, do you know what, mate? Just point out which one of my rampy hopefuls you're talking about. Give us some examples, and I'll go through fundamentally and technically why I think they're good. But having said that, I think I do see what he's saying. When I hold stock, I do feel quite, you know, passionate about it. That's why I buy stock in them. But I do look at all companies I look at on a fundamental and technical basis in the placing of an industry. But I think that'd be quite good for two different funds. Which one would you invest into? Justin's rampy hopefuls or John's cautious quality?
I think cautious quality's got to win every day over the long term. This is what I'm saying. This is why, you know, obviously those inflation figures today are pretty good news. Although, I mean, if you look behind the numbers, if you look behind the headline figures, there's some real shocking numbers in there still. I mean, food and beverage inflation is still, you know, 17% plus. What else is up? Alcohol, beverages and tobacco, horrendous for people that enjoy that sort of thing. Up 9%, although, you know, down 9.2%, but that's, you know, it's a 0.1% drop. You know, so we are seeing some of the sort of energy costs coming out the system, that sort of thing, in particular. But, you know, there's horrendously, right, you know, rapidly rising prices here in many things that sort of underpin our economy. I just think whilst, obviously, the market looks at inflation and that has that mechanical effect, as I've talked about before. And the economy is not the stock market or vice versa, as we often say. You know, there's still pain ahead. You know, this is. I think I saw one commentator refer to this earlier as a glimmer. And I think we should be cautious not to get carried away.
I'm showing you the two-year bond, okay? I mean, look at that. It did hit a previous high. 5.4. Estimates are now, in fact, the top British story we've got here is basically interest rates are predicted to rise less sharply after the UK saw a surprise drop in inflation. Now, the thing is, you're right, there's a difference, and people always should look at the difference between the economy and the market. And I think people are getting these confused. And I did have a discussion yesterday on Twitter, and I said, listen, you don't understand. The market has priced this in. We've been falling for 18 months. It knows the recession's on the cards. It knows that. That's why a lot of stocks in the market are at all-time lows. The market is at, barring the COVID dip, the COVID crash, the AIM All Share is at 2016 levels.
I think the
How bad a news are we going to get?
I actually think the market's become a lot more short-termist. in what it's looking ahead to than it perhaps used to be and should be. You know, we see the outlook upon which the market moves, you know, it's been changing rapidly. And so, you know, if it was possible to price everything in, then, you know, we wouldn't have these periods of volatility.
Oh, no, it can't be. It can't price. That's how you make money on shares, because they're oversold. Yeah. They get, you know, to the point where people just literally risk averse, herd mentality, sell everything, regardless of the valuation or the value within inherent within these companies. People will sell in downturns. They get scared.
Yeah.
So that's why. But what I'm saying is, now the market is seeing this. This is what I think is seeing. So it's getting less worse now. We are seeing figures getting less worse. That's all the market has to know. So essentially from here, it may take a while to come out of this, but the market, as we know, is like a year, 18 months ahead. So if you're looking forward like 18 months or a year ahead, will the figures be getting better? I think they'd be better than where we were going 6 months.
And well, it depends. Whether we have... we have a recession, and if so, what the severity of that recession is and the length of that recession. And, you know, we've been able to predict the length of the bear market that we've been in. You know, we've, in fact, arguably, we've been in and out of a bear market, you know, hopping around there. You know, so I don't know. I just think it pays to be cautious.
No, it doesn't. You know, it doesn't. And right it pays... No. Right now, it pays to be brave.
The market's giving there's a very fine line between being brave and being foolish. I think that, you know, being brave is, and this is why I go back to the cautious quality. Being brave in a market like this is going, you know, this is a good company, but it isn't going to rise for a while because the market conditions are pretty poor, because sentiment generally is pretty poor. So I'm looking at the chart, you know, look at one of the top risers on FTSE 100, Hargreaves Lansdown, up 7% today. Quality company. Absolutely quality company, you know, come off quite a lot from its high. You know, shares almost got to 25 quid, and you can now get them for less than 10.
Yeah.
You know, this is not going anywhere, this company. This is not going anywhere. When I say that, I mean, it's not going to go out of business. It's not going to get, you know, eaten alive by its competition. I really don't think it will. You know, the likes of AJ Bell, Interactive Investor, you know, it's had a tough time because of that competitive threat. It's had a tough time because, you know, it needed to invest in its platform. But, you know, you buy this now, this is a high quality business. You get it on 12 times, 4 times earnings. This is where I would say, be brave with a company like this, where you've got some quality backing behind that investment.
I agree. You know? I completely agree. I'm not saying be brave and that means throw all your money on any old nonsense, microcap nonsense. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying whenever I look at a company, you know, first and foremost, if it's a loss-making company, how much cash they got? They got more than 12 months worth of operational cash, you know. But I mean, with Hargreaves, I've looked at them several times. I put them to a spreadsheet. I'm still not convinced now. I mean, even at the fall, they will rise because they're a market leader. I know that. But I mean, they're still not cheap. And I know you pay a premium for that sort of market leading status. But like you said, in the last few years, the new entrants have come into the market and it's happening all the time. Now, from a fundamental point of view, they're safe. Of course they are. But from a technical point of view, not convinced at all by this rally. I mean, because look at that. Previous highs have been up 9-10 quid. Now, until they start making out new highs, I wouldn't bother touching them. And then after that, maybe so. But that could easily fail towards that sort of, you know, 10 level and fall back down.
But just going back to this point about, you know, being brave. You know, look at the house builders, which have also, you know, spiked quite sharply today. Now, I'm not convinced that that is a sector that you could describe as quality. So, you know, this is a sector that is exposed to recessionary forces, perhaps even more so than you know, someone like Hargreaves, which is you know, a long-term business that generates its money, come, you know, rain or shine, through the fees it charges. You know, house builders are in a tough spot. We know that they're going to deliver fewer houses this year. We know that you know, pressure on mortgage rates is rising. You know, that to get a deposit is becoming harder for first-time buyers who are retreating from the market. So you know, you can say, oh, let's be brave and buy a house builder because the rates, you know, the what you call terminal rates have come down a bit. But I would say that actually, no, in this case, that's foolish, because actually the recessionary pressures that are behind all this will impact this massively more. So I do think you have to. I say you have to be discerning, whatever, wherever you are in the market cycle.
Yeah, but hang on a second. If you look at House Builders, for example, okay, I mean, they did have a nice little rally. Over, you could say this was largely oversold. There's a Taylor Wimpey here, by the way, going down to sort of 90 pence a share. But what's going to happen now is that they said, you know, the headline number is the Bank of England probably won't raise as aggressively or as high as previously thought. So people are now looking at mortgages going forward. And you obviously get mortgages of 2 years, 5 years, whatever, you get 10 years. And that's a mix of that interest rate going forward. The swap rates have continued down. Now, the reduction in mortgage rates, even though it's like quite, you know, high historically over the last 10 years, you know, cheaper mortgages will start coming online. That'll give a boost to the housing market eventually. I mean, I'm not going to say it's happening in the next 6 months, but I mean, if you look at Taylor Wimpey, no debt, you know, good balance sheet, pay a, what, a 5% dividend.
But they're massively cyclical. Massively cyclical.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, yeah, of course they are. But what I'm saying is, where are you going to put your money now? If interest rates come down, okay, if they start coming down in a while, they may do, would it be better in a house builder or in the bank?
I'm not putting him in a house builder. Absolutely, I wouldn't put him in a house builder.
No, I mean, to be honest, the chart isn't convincing there. I mean, the previous I got an alert there on 130 pence there. But, I'm not in any house builders at all. But
I can say, I mean, it's obviously a good day for markets. You know, if it's good for everybody that inflation is starting to moderate. But
it is the day. It is the day where, honestly, if you're looking at, I'm looking at a company, I've got three of my companies are over 8% up today, and they're starting to move nicely, and they're off the bottoms, and they're breaking out new highs. And I think it's almost like that feeling. I had it last week. It was a feeling wave, almost like a vaccine day, Thursday before, and a lot of liquidity come in. It's almost like the guys from the Bank of England are giving some market insiders, and they're saying, listen, there's some good figures coming out. Honestly, there's some odd liquidity that came in last week. In fact, it wasn't odd. It was off the back of the CPI in America. But we're seeing this now on the world. It's starting with the figures getting less worse. That's all the market needs to know. And they're getting less worse. So where does that lead to in the end? The figures are getting better, you know, eventually over time. And they're not going to be as bad as they were. Anyway, top business story. Let's look at some of the winners today. Optibiotics. Are you aware of what they do, John? Optibiotics.
Yeah. I mean, this is an interesting story today. It's basically a sugar substitute that they're developing. It's quite an interesting market, this. I mean, I remember, but looking back, some years ago, there was a company called Pure Circle, which was built producing sweeteners from something called stevia, which was very popular. But it's a nice little story. It's developing this we know there's sort of evidence that some of the sweeteners that we've used for years, you know, your sort of aspartame and sucralose are not necessarily very good for you. So there is always a quest for alternative sweeteners. They've got some decent partnerships. It's, yeah, nice little company. Share prices horrendous.
51% up today, and essentially, but the share price up, but if you look at that, taking into context of where it's been, where it's come from, we're talking about, you know, the highs of like in 21 of 60 odd pence, and now it's down 11 pence, so it's come down a long way, but nevertheless, it's that there is quite encouraging, breaking through that 50-day moving average. We'll see if it can, I mean, you'd expect it to come back a little bit. But if it can stay above those almost like 10 pence there, that's quite good. What else is rising today? In fact, we covered the East Imperial. They did a convertible loan note with about 2.12 with a distributor of theirs in Macau, which is very good. I always say with convertible loan notes, it's not a good thing so much if they're held by a third party that has no involvement with the business apart from getting their money back, and that's what they do, is loan you money. But that's interesting party. Yeah. Another one is MediaZest, tiny company, up 16% today. And it's risen, basically saying a little bit bullish on the updates. But
is this a new dash for trash? I mean, that is one thing I would say. You know,
you take off that
inflation break, and everyone just piles into a load of old rubbish. Which is what we saw before.
But that can happen though. But the thing is, it's because these companies. I mean, the dash for trash thing happens because they've been so oversold. You know, they're ridiculous. You are seeing microcaps now, and I'm not saying they're good businesses. I'm not saying MediaZest.
Then they're not oversold.
not specifically. No, you are getting companies literally valued in cash. Some of them are loss making, but some of them are not.
Maybe that's fair.
market doesn't see it. Well, we can I have valuation judgments on companies, and I'm wrong on the share price quite often. There's a couple of companies I could point out saying they need cash desperately, but they're still rallying. And it doesn't make any sense from a fundamentals perspective, but that's not what the market is saying. People are piling in. Now, there's certain companies, I don't want to mention them, but I say wait till the results come out and you may see it, have a sort of slap about the face here, because there are plenty of companies rallying. But I mean, that's where you get when companies are massively oversold, you do have that almost breakneck correction. Mediaset is one half a million, but their market cap is around about, less than a million. So that's quite significant for them, where they're making a loss. I don't know how much money they've got, but that's a rally today, But here's the one you like, John, because you're a bit of a bear. John the bear. Have you seen Watkin Jones today?
Yeah.
Now, they are a leading developer and manager of residential for rent, with a focus on the build to rent, student accommodation, and affordable housing sectors. And they said in the period, many sales going forward, but they said they worry about the sales now. But in the period since the interim results, market conditions have become more challenging. But they're going to make a sort of underlying profit before tax around about 2 million of H1, they say, but that may go down now. They say, but there we are. And but they've got cash, they've got net cash of around about 36 million. So not a problem, but still they've, what's the ticker on those? It is
WJG.
Yeah, let's look at the WJG, and look at that. Yeah, awful downtrend. What you do want is the downtrend and then a bad trading update. It's almost like, you've been slashed 1,000 times, and then all of a sudden the big knife goes in at the end. It's like, it's awful, isn't it?
But this isn't, it's not far removed from the house building sector, is it, really? I mean, it's just a slightly different model. It's building to sell to institutions as a rental asset, whether that be student accommodation or housing, residential housing, rather than direct sales, and it's the same pressures that are coming to bear on this business as are being felt across the entire house building sector. So yes, we have seen this wonderful rally in house building shares today because interest rates are not going to rise perhaps as far as people worried they would. But it's the same sector, it's the same principle, and it's the same pressures that they're dealing with.
Right, yeah.
So arguably, can we expect similar, tricky trading updates from other companies in the sector? I mean, Gleeson, great business, but affordable housing, it's what it does.
Well, do you know what? I jumped into Gleeson and go back out. So I looked at when I look at companies, I literally, fill out the spreadsheet, I look at the fundamentals, cash, all that level, but I also look at forecasts and momentum, and they play heavily into, because you can have a company that's undervalued for a long time, and there's no momentum there. But I looked at Gleeson, and even going forward, not overly ambitious metrics, and I didn't, what I'm looking to get, essentially, with any company, is about 100% over the next two, three years, okay? And if you're in microcaps, that should be attainable. And Gleeson wasn't there. And so the recovery is a bit further down than we think. And so I was seeing around a maximum of 50% over the next 2-3 years. And
That's a decent return.
No, it is, yes, but that's, I mean, there are better, again, there are better opportunities out there, I believe.
And there are.
I left it alone. And I think that will change, though, those forecasts. Now, what's going to change is either the valuation goes down further or the forecasts get better, or a mixture of both. So I believe there's that bigger return in there yet to come on Gleeson, but yet those figures aren't coming through, the good figures, they are still being very quite pessimistic about the bill levels. Once you see a bit of a change in that, maybe, but who knows? It may be too late. Yeah.
But that's exactly why I don't get massively excited when you see this huge.
Oh, I do. I think it's amazing, Mark. I think it's just changed. This is almost like the day I've been waiting for 18 months. I honestly think it's a sea change here. The tide is generally coming in or going out, and now he's almost seen it's come up. It's almost the tide has come up. We're almost drowning, and it's starting to go back down. Before we started drowning, it's starting to come back down there. And that's how I feel it is at the moment.
I admire your optimism. I think. maybe it's sort of just being a gloomy pessimistic bear is, you know, it's not a great way to live one's life.
No, I can be the most negative of people, honestly, but I do feel almost, I don't know what it is, maybe it is false optimism. I just
you have
think
to
it's
be.
Not getting any worse. You've got to be an optimist to invest in shares, to be
you
honest,
do.
Because you take so many knocks.
Well, there's a famous book. It's, Marsh and Dibson, Triumph of the Optimist. It's now become the Credit Suisse Annual Returns Yearbook. And it's an extraordinary, you know, tale of why markets have delivered over the years, you know, through thick or thin, through war and depression. You know, they do tend to outperform other asset classes over the long term. I was looking at gold and it's sort of 120-year history compared to stocks. Gold has done 10,000% over 120-odd years, but stocks have done 100,000%, you know, over that period. You know, stocks win the day. But as I say, they win the day at an index level, you know, if you're in a tracker, or you buy the winners and the companies that survive, you know, through the long term. You know, most companies don't survive. Most companies either get swallowed up or fail or whatever. There are not many survivors in markets over the long term. And that's why I always go for quality of ones that will last or the ones that will get bought at a nice premium at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, there's a way of buying stocks. I mean, what I try and do is I literally don't go for big exposure at the start on any company, because you can get carried away. You have confirmation bias when you do research and you buy a stock and you think it's the best. My favorite stock is the last one I bought, always. You know, it's like, yes, this is good. And then something could go wrong. You could get, you know, some news come from left field and your sector takes a hit or whatever, and it can go wrong. So I literally try and keep my exposure at the start minimal. If it starts winning, goes in the right direction, I will average up but in a certain way, so I know I'm backing a winner rather than a loser, and I won't sort of average down so much, especially in a bear market. I mean, average down in that, because like I said, you're not buying a dip, you're buying a downtrend, and that can make you skint. But most followed companies today, by the way, Cleantech Lithium, of course, that up to Jork Resource you talked about. Argo Blockchain is down 21%, and that's also the most read RNS. They raised some money at about, I think, about 28% discount, pretty much, compared to the last thing. But they were.
Bitcoin's not been doing too badly of late.
It's had a little bit of a fallback of late, and about last couple of trading sessions. I don't know why, because you got all this sort of the ETF starting up, the Bitcoin ETFs, you know, BlackRock and all that. So that's giving a bit of liquidity, but also maybe there's more shorting going on, but also this is Bitcoin dollar. So if the dollar's strengthening against everything else, I don't know, you know, is that play basically? So who knows? But it hasn't got better. But
Bitcoin mining, my understanding of the problem Bitcoin miners have had is power.
Yeah.
It's a very, very power intensive thing.
And so, blockchain took on a bit of debt as well. They took a bit of debt. They literally, when the easy money was very good, they started really ramping up, and all of a sudden, at the top of the market, they found themselves with a bit of debt, and the Bitcoin price crashed.
Yeah,
very much. And
then I was speaking to David Lenegas, who's now behind a company called Vynance, and you know their business is all about power arbitrage. You go to a place where you get the cheapest power to mine, and you go to a place where, you know, and you buy your mining machines as cheaply as you possibly can. But it's an arbitrage business, really. It's a power arbitrage business, Bitcoin mining, which is why they've had a bit of a tough time.
Yeah. But also, the Saddams have a bit of debt.
But it doesn't help when interest rates are rising.
RNS was, so also one of the most read is Afentra. I'm not familiar with this company much. Azul acquisition and Senegal acquisition update. Basically, they've got a special purpose vehicle. They've acquired 12% of block 3 or 5, but they've had to suspend shares because they've their admission document and stuff. So it's not my area of expertise. I'm sure.
I don't know this company. I have to admit.
You've done an article on Audioboom, so I put that in worth reading. It's taken a hit. Michael Tobin, chairman, executive chairman, has bought some more shares, I believe. I just saw an RNS come out. I haven't checked it, but director. Yeah, has he bought more shares?
I don't know if he's bought more shares. I had a look at the results and, you know, half-year results. I thought they were all okay. I mean, they lost a big podcast. I think it cost them about $7.5 million of revenues. It's a true crime podcast called Morbid. which went over to Amazon.
That worries me when one podcast can hit them like that. And I thought they need to. They may be in the process of diversifying their revenue streams, but when one podcast can take a big hit like that, then you know you need a few more eggs in your basket.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. That sort of goes back to what I was talking about yesterday, with this sort of concentration of revenue in a sort of single product or a single client or whatever it might be. But actually, you sort of look behind the numbers here and. The audience is growing. They've had some record listener numbers. Advertising markets improving, and some of the initiatives they've got behind it are doing pretty well. And they've got a lot of cash in the bank, actually. So were they to need to replace something like a Morbid, they do actually have a reasonable amount of cash to go out and fund content investment. They've got some good podcasts on there.
Yeah,
cycling podcast, Trigonometry. That's a very popular one.
But you know what? The last two companies we talked about, there were two companies I missed out on 10 bags. I was held them. I'm big fans of them. Blockchain before the Bitcoin price went mad, and also podcasts. The podcast is huge. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But of course, that attracts more competition, and the margins get thinner. I got out. I got bored with it, and then all of a sudden, it just went mad on the rumors of it was being taken over by Spotify and all the stuff. But
one of them did get taken over, didn't it? It was Acast that got taken over by Spotify. It was. So, there's probably no smoke with that fire. It's an interesting market still. I think, podcasts are still incredibly popular.
Probably a lot of consolidation needs doing because there's a lot of providers out there, and you realize people like Spotify realize, in fact, there's the margins on music's even thinner. You have to pay the artists all this money. And but Stuart, by the way, last RNS was Stuart Lars, a CEO, has just bought about 10 grand's worth at 189. So Michael Tobin is a guy that keeps buying like crazy. He's an executive, chief executive. He's been buying all the way down. I think, it must be a bit painful for him.
Well, it must do. But it is ultimately a profitable business at an adjusted EBITDA level, admittedly. But this is not a zero revenue, zero growth, zero profit business. This does have a trajectory to what it calls a return to meaningful growth, quote.
Yeah. So that's what I saw around here, on this level here, about 180, and it went to like 22 quid.
Buying back then. Give you an opportunity to have a second crack.
But it's now back there. I mean, the thing is, again, if you look at momentum here, it literally hasn't touched that 200-day moving average. If you just wait for a cross the 200-day moving average and a new break to a new high, then, it's a good chance you'll get in the right place. For example, they broke it up there. You're on a new high, so there, so £2.30. And here, we're way off the 200-day moving average. So it needs to have a couple of days going sideways and a few rises before to get above that. But
I think this is a bad business at all. Not a bad business at all.
Well, they may get taken out. This level now, what is the market cap now? It's 34 million. It's like for someone, a big player, that's nothing. That's nothing, is it? And the orders they're acquiring, and it's just a nice little add-on.
They're doing 135 million downloads a month. Yeah, 135 million downloads a month. There's a big traffic base behind this company. You've got that's a classic hype cycle share price chart, but and inevitably when companies are hyped up that much and they're pre-profit or on that sort of cusp, then nothing makes a lot of sense.
No.
And then people get disillusioned and nobody wants to talk about it anymore and nobody wants to invest in it anymore. Find the next hypey, rampy stock, Justin, and then go from there.
I look at it on a fundamental level and also I look at the chart level. But I do like micro caps and small caps more than big. I got to say that. And I do find them more exciting and just easier to get your head round. It's almost a single story sometimes. And in fact, if you get a micro cap with many different stories, because they've added bolt on during the cleanse of the company, that stay away from it. It should be a simple story that you can get your head around and understand.
Agreed. This is a simple story, and actually, I think there's a bit of substance here, worth another little poke around.
Yeah. Okay, it's a bit of rampiness. Sorry, I do apologize. I do own some stock in this company, Infinity Energy Systems, AGM statement. They say they're on in line to deliver their H1 goals, 13 million for the first half. This is versus 1.4. Now, this is what you should look at. When you get companies that microcaps, they should be growing top line, okay? And that is an amazing growth of top line, 9 times compared to the previous H1. And if you look at their forecast, it continues in this way, pretty much. They're looking at 25 million for this year, and in fact, 13 million, they're probably just a little bit half over that. That's a 7,700% increase on revenues last year. And it, of course, the power of numbers, you can't keep doing
that. I
think
they'll beat those numbers. Yeah. I think they'll beat those numbers. Looking at the half-year figures, you know, I'm looking at a turnover forecast of 25.6 million.
Yeah.
And they're doing 13 in the first.
Yeah, well, continues into 2024, 52 million, that's 108%. And in 2025, even more, 120 million by 2024 forecast.
Yeah.
Because they are at now, and they are getting profitable in 24, 25.
25, I'm looking at profits.
They probably need another a raise in a year's time, pretty much. But then the share price and the start of the bull market we're in now, a lot easier to raise money.
Yeah.
But, I like that. I think they are at the point, there's a lot of this going on. It's like, you know, wind blowing and all this. People talk about this. Sun shines, wind blows. Where does the energy go? Exactly. You have to store it. Most of it you have to store. Most of it's wasted at the moment. And these are industrial grade, you know, batteries that store it for as long as you want. And they last for 25 years, these batteries.
Yeah,
so yeah. And they are market leaders in this. And so they've gone past that. It's a huge, you know, capital exhaustive business, but they've gone past that now level where they are starting to almost get break even. But it's been quite a few years of big losses. But that's the kind of money you need to invest in that kind of business, because those container batteries are not cheap to make, you know. But they are at that inflection point, which is
I've been speaking to quite a few people in this little subsector recently. It's about Gore Street Energy Storage and Triple Point Energy. And you know, batteries are interesting. They are not. As it stands, certainly the lithium ion batteries are not a replacement for some of the sort of energy generation sources that we have at the moment. And the main problem with lithium ion as a storage solution is that they discharge very quickly.
And catch fire.
I don't think there's been too many lithium ion fires in energy storage facilities, grid storage facilities. But
there's been a few. Honestly, if you look at Infinity's, they've obviously highlighted a few. But there's been in California, in Australia, big fires. And when they get going, they catch other lithium ion batteries. It's like, oh, there's a problem.
I mean, that is a risk. But you know, it is the technology that's pretty standard across battery storage facilities at the moment. But it discharges very quickly, and the battery life. They don't last forever, these things. They degrade. And so it's problematic. You know, they can't be used as a replacement generating source. They tend to be used battery storage facilities for things like grid balancing, frequency balancing, to make sure that, you know, the grid is stable in terms of, like, the power it produces. And it becomes more unstable the more renewables you plug into it, more intermittent sources you plug into it. And these guys, I was having a read this morning, do something slightly different, which is called vanadium flow, which is a different type of technology. And, you know, from what I can ascertain, this technology has significant advantages over lithium ion, not least that the batteries, so they're liquid batteries, they last forever, they discharge slowly, and therefore becoming much more cost effective than lithium ion.
When I last looked into it, I mean, if you look at the life of the battery, you know, a vanadium flow battery versus lithium ion, and lithium ion start to degrade after 5 years, and so by 10 years maximum, you have to get rid of it and get a new one, whereas these last for 25 years. But over the, I think it's called localized cost of storage, and it's about $111 for vanadium flow, and it's about $130 for lithium. So over the life of the storage of the vanadium flow, it's more efficient.
I think they'll get cheaper because, you know, this is got a second phase technology lithium ion, and it's, you know, as I say, it's not as prevalent, well used across the market as it is currently. This is why you're seeing these massive growth forecasts from Infinity, because you know, this seems to be the next phase of the technology cycle for grid batteries, and I think they're definitely in the right place. Funnily enough, there's another little company I noticed this morning that's a miner that's getting in on this, which is Ironveld, which I'd not looked at before, but they're in vanadium.
Yeah.
And making the most of it. I'm going to have a little look to see if there's anything there. But yeah, well, Invinity, great business.
As far as suppliers of there's Bushveld Minerals as well, BMN, that's a massive hit. But if just the chart there, quite likely because it's broken up from previous highs and continued there up above 200-day moving average. But their second phase now, which will make them even more efficient and even more of a market, is called Project Mistral. And it was in conjunction with Siemens Gamesa, which is one of the big wind turbine producers. And that will be the starting pilots on that right now. But commercially, it's going to be launched, I think it's Q1 or Q2 next year. And that will bring the cost down even further. And it's a lot more impressive. So that phase. And it's starting to get orders on that already. So,
Seriously, okay. Good company.
Yeah. Anything else on the news? Just one other thing on news, by the way. Talking about everything's electric. Jaguar Land Rover owner Tata has confirmed plans to build its flagship electric car battery factory in the UK in Somerset. Expect to create 4,000 jobs and thousands more in the wider supply chain. Tata said it will invest £4 billion on the site. It's under the government is providing subsidies worth hundreds of millions of pounds. Good. That's what they're there for.
Well, apparently about £500 million. Let's hope the thing gets built. Call me a cynic, but is there a by-election at some point soon Somerset?
I think Rishi's going to have to... This is one rabbit out of the hat. He's going to have to do a lot more than this, I think. He's going to have to pull 20 rabbits out of the hat to get a win under his belt, I think. But they say this is the most important investment in the UK automotive sector since Nissan arrived in the 1980s. The new gigafactory is 40 gigawatts, one of the largest in Europe, and will make batteries for Jaguar Land Rover vehicles like Range Rover, Defender, and Jaguar brands. The plan is to supply other car manufacturers as well, with production at the new factory due to start in 2026. So even now, if you get, it's still like a couple of years off, even that. So we should have been doing this a couple of years back, because there are factories already in Europe way ahead of us. We are way behind the curve.
Arguably, yes.
I don't understand what politicians are doing. Help business. Facilitate business. Don't get in the way of it. And that's the problem. And I think largely now don't want to get on the Brexit thing, but Brexit sort of got to win in the way of business now. I mean, even I, voted for it, thinks it wasn't a good decision for business. And regardless of where your political stance is,
Personally, I just think we're run by an incompetent government. Everything that's happening around us, whether that be Brexit or COVID or, Ukraine, we lack strong and consistent leadership. We lack an industrial strategy. I refrain from calling it a policy. Thatcher, was behind the arrival of Japanese car makers to the UK in the 1980s. And, love or loathe her, and I don't know many people loathe her. There was an idea behind how she approached the economy and business. And where we should be, focusing our specialisms. And that's why it's like, instead of trying to build UK car makers, in the 80s, I think she'd realised that we were behind the curve and that the real innovation in car making came from Japan. So we invite them here. And I think the same is now true of batteries. We look what happened with British Volt, an absolute disaster. Yeah.
Elon Musk over a couple of years back and said, right, any innovators like that, get them over, get them building in your country.
Don't try and do this homegrown nonsense because it would just
John for Prime Minister.
No, thanks.
Just a quick look at the indices all up there. Pretty much four rises, as you can, Persimmon, Hargreaves Lansdown, Land Securities. It's all, pretty much property and Hargreaves are there. And what are the fallers in the FTSE? Pretty much miners. Mine is there, Centrica. In fact, Centrica's quite interesting.
Look at the price
of gas. And I was saying on Twitter, I said, I hope someone's storing this this gas, because it's like, if we just get the gas price up before we finish. Because if you look at it, commodities, and that gas, look at the price of this now. We have another capacity. Centrica have the rough storage, which now that the 12-day storage, apparently. In Europe, they can do like 100-day storage. France, 100 days. We're at 12 days. Now, are we not? We shouldn't be buying up here. We should be selling it here and buying it here. So I don't know who's doing this, but we need to be storing now big time at these prices.
Yeah, it's a disgrace that we don't have gas storage. We used to have significantly more gas storage.
Again, government.
I do think it is. Although, there are some sort of private You know, companies that, well, publicly owned companies that have underinvested in storage facilities. But you know, if you're going to spend billions of pounds, well, you know, and gas is so important to the economy, well, build some gas storage with it. You know, have a national strategic reserve. You know, 12 days gas storage is not enough, and we're going to see spiking prices again in winter.
A failure of
government energy policy here. And in fact, I think energy and business policy are sort of tied up in the same department now anyway. It's about time we had someone with some sense looking after business and energy in this country.
Marvellous stuff.
Who is it? It's Grant Shapps, isn't it? Is it Grant Shapps?
Anyway, that's it for Taking Stock. Run a bit over today, but we run over today because it's the start of a bull market, okay? Mark that in your diaries. 19th of July, 2023. I say it's the start. You know, be sensible, but I think figures will get less worse from here. John's cautiously optimistic there. But
yeah.
Speak tomorrow, Evan. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.